Hey folks, it's Hannes Finney. Thank you for supporting Storyworthy. Not only the people who actually give us money, but the people who give us thanks. Sometimes you go on Twitter and you say, I like at Storyworthy. That's all it takes. Thank you for doing that. Thank you for writing for us. Even when you criticize me for things I don't deserve to be criticized for in the emails, Christine sends them to me and she laughs and laughs and laughs. Thank you.
Storyworthy Media. The best in story-driven content.
Hey, it's Dennis Gubbins, and you're listening to Storyworthy, and we thank you.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from the Thailand Hilton in Bangkok.
Fantastic. This is a beautiful place.
It is a beautiful place. I'm going to stay inside because I'm afraid of everything outside.
Oh,
so I'm just
going
to stay in the buffet area and listen to old rock songs.
All right. We're here in Thailand because our storyteller tonight, Dennis Gubbins. Dennis Gubbins, Hannes, he brings forth the topic, I saved a lady in the jungle in Thailand.
Ooh. See, jungle. That's what I'm afraid of.
That's very specific. I saved a lady in the jungle in Thailand.
But it's Thailand. You don't know if it was really a lady. Could be a lady boy. Thailand is scary like that. We don't know what's going on. So I'm interested.
Now listen.
Because I have never done this.
I have been to Thailand. And I'll tell you, the night I landed in Bangkok, I went over to see a friend of mine who was shooting a movie at the time. And I went over to see him. And we were staying at the Oriental Hotel, which, by the way, voted the world's best hotel like 15 years in a row, like the world's best hotel, like an crazily, and it was maybe $500 a night, which at the time was very expensive.
And it's, I believe, by the way, that they have one of James Michener's original typewriters.
Is that right?
Because he wrote a novel while staying at the
Oriental.
The Oriental.
Wow. Okay. So that's where we were staying. So that's the good news.
Useless information.
But that's the good news. But the bad news is I get in, it's maybe like 2 a.m., very late at night, and you know, the traffic wasn't bad at that point. So from the airport to downtown Bangkok was maybe only like 35 minutes.
Yeah.
During traffic, it could be 3-4 hours. I mean, the traffic in Thailand is so bad, they sell toilets that you keep in your car. They do. It's very common to have a toilet in your car.
Do you wonder why I don't want to leave the buffet?
But the point is, in downtown Bangkok, I got down there and it was very late, like I said, and it was very hot. So we're sitting outside at 2 a.m. We're drinking Singhas, S-I-N-G-H-A. That's
right.
It. We're drinking Singhas. And then we go into the hotel. And the point is, I wake up in the morning and I'm covered in mosquito bites. I got completely bitten up by mosquito bites. So for the next 10 days of my trip, my skin is lumpy. Because I had like a reaction to, and so then we go out and we're doing all the touristy things you do in Bangkok. You know, we go to
the whorehouse.
Amazing.
You go to the other whorehouse.
No. You go to some amazing temples and there's so much to see. And then the food, of course, is exquisite, but it's also very foreign.
Yeah.
And I got diarrhea very badly. From food.
Man, and this is a sexy story for you. You're covered in bumps here. You're squirting.
I know, right? So I have to learn a little bit of Thai. And you want to know what I learned?
Where's the toilet?
Thuang dong. Thuang dong. And that means, so if you say, sawadika, sawadika, you say sawadika. And then you say, thang dong. And that means I have diarrhea. That's what I had to learn. This is before the internet, by the way. This wasn't
But why are you telling people? Why can't you just
because
learn
I have to go
where's
to a pharmacy.
The bathroom?
At right. this point, no, I've had diarrhea for like a day or two. Now I got to get like Imodium AD or something to stop this activity. Anyway, so that's how I have to learn the phrase. Boom.
Oh, my God.
So after a couple of days in Bangkok, we go down to Koh Samui. It's a tiny little island just south of Bangkok.
Okay.
And then the trip went a lot better. I'm just saying.
But now, who can you tell us who this person was?
Yeah, he was a guy I dated, Scott Seneschal. Whatever.
But what was he doing?
He was an AD. He was shooting a movie.
Oh, he was shooting a movie.
A little movie called Operation Dumbo Drop. Excuse me. Hello. Now I'm dropping names.
Yeah. I was like, could it Apocalypse Now?
He was shooting, but they shoot like the big elephant movies. They shoot those in Chiang Mai, you know, north.
Of course, because I'm all up on elephant movies.
In the jungle, the jungles of Thailand.
The jungle, the mighty jungle.
So the point is,
the lion sleeps tonight. I'm doing the whole song.
I would definitely go back to Thailand.
I wouldn't go to Thailand if, I mean, if I literally could stay here at the Hilton, I might go to Thailand.
Really?
But otherwise, no.
Oh, my gosh, Hannes, there are so many beautiful places in Thailand and some tremendous hotels. Like, even the Holiday Inn in Bangkok is 5-star.
Okay, no. See, I'm all about the hotels. Places. Now, I'm not going to go out and get drunk. I'm not going to be bit by mosquitoes, and I'm not going to shit my way across Asia.
Would you go through this little area of where you go? Oh, gosh, what's it called? The little tiny rivers you go through on the boats, the floating villages, these floating markets. You wouldn't do that?
I've seen James Bond movies. Like, a guy always gets killed and thrown off those.
There's feces in the water. That's tough.
Not selling it.
That's
you
tough.
See how you're not? How about I go to a really awesome Thai restaurant in Los Angeles and then they have running water there.
Well,
they probably have a C in the window, but I still probably don't get diarrhea.
I would go back to Thailand in a minute. And you know what else is supposedly very popular over there is to get plastic surgery.
I've heard all surgery.
All surgery.
What you do is I think also India, mm-hmm. where it's like you say you need a very elaborate, like a hip replacement.
Right.
It's so much cheaper.
So much
by
cheaper.
By like 90%.
Right.
That you simply basically move to India for a month or Thailand.
Right.
The guy who was probably trained at Harvard replaces your knee or your hip or something, and then you recover there.
It's just that when you come back, what is your recourse later? You know, if you have to have a checkup or you need a little more assistance. I mean, I'm just saying it's not completely flushed out.
I think I see what you're saying.
I had some dental
work. So you have
work.
A brand new awesome hip, but your sphincter is ruined because of the food.
I had some dental work in Mumbai last year. And I kid you not, they did the most amazing job. No, but he did because I had this laminate fall off my tooth and I had to go to an emergency dentist. And the dentist's office was absolutely stunning. And they make the teeth, like they mold the teeth. They create the teeth there in the office. Yeah. And he was trying to pitch that to my friend and I, how, you know, yeah, anytime you need laminates or any kind of dental work, you come over to Mumbai, I'll do it right here. Look how cheap it is. And sure enough,
yeah,
it was only $60. It was 4,000 rupees,
yeah.
Which is only $60.
But you got to get to Mumbai. That's got to cost some money.
I know. That's the tricky part.
No. Okay. I'm going to go to Mumbai. I'm going to get a full makeover. All new teeth, two new knees, two new hips, just as a preventative measure.
Yeah.
This is going to be fantastic. I'll get some hair implants.
Just don't go out into the jungle. That's all I'm saying.
In the jungle.
But listen, there is something about the jungle I wanted to say also, though, is that when you get out into the jungle or what they call the bush, it is truly like it's
thick.
I don't know how to explain it. Yeah, it'd be like a rainforest, a jungle. I mean, this is like, I don't think we're talking about where there's paths. We're not talking about like go see the beautiful
waterfall.
No,
a place
waterfall.
Where literally if you don't have a machete, you walk 3 feet.
You couldn't
and
get
you
through.
Stop.
Right. It'd be like going, right, exactly. Yeah, so yeah. I think that's the kind of jungle.
Again, not going. Not
I think that's
going.
The kind of jungle Dennis is talking about, but we're going to find
out. I'm
going
to go see Yul Brynner's house in Thailand. You even know why I'm making that joke?
No, I have no idea.
Because The King and I plays The King of Siam, and Siam is what they used to call Thailand.
Yeah, okay. There, I got that, but boy, that's a long way to go.
Well, I say it's a long way to go for free teeth.
All right, you guys. Before Dennis Gubbins comes on and tells us about a lady he saved in the jungle in Thailand, I did want to remind you that if you'd like to support the Storyworthy podcast, that would be great. Here's the first thing you can do. Just leave us a good review on iTunes.
Yes.
Why do I have to beg?
I don't know. And why is it so important?
I'll tell you why it's important.
I'm saying to iTunes itself,
it's
very important.
Unfortunately, it is.
And you don't have to write an essay. You can just go out and say, I love Storyworthy. I think Storyworthy is great. It's awesome. I love to hear about people with diarrhea. That's all you need to say.
Just give us 5 stars. And here's something else you can do. Why not join our mailing list? And you'll find that over at storyworthypodcast.com. Just click on the little thing. Every Monday morning, you get a friendly little note from me, and I will make your day. Did you hear me? I'll make your goddamn day.
I'll make your goddamn day.
And you can also follow us over on Instagram and on Twitter at Storyworthy. And why not buy my book? Pick the LAX, my Storyworthy.
We're going
life.
Whole hog here. And if you're going to buy something on Amazon, you can go through the Amazon link on our website.
That's it. That's the entire
pitch.
You can
buy your Civil War pornography right there.
That's the entire pitch right there. Okay, you guys, hang tight wherever you are because Dennis Gubbins is on his way here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have commercial director and podcaster Jordan Brady.
And I'll be talking about the fabulous world of making commercials.
That's next time on Storyworthy.
Hi, everybody. It's Phil Rosenthal, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
And we're back. Okay, I was forced at gunpoint to leave the Hilton, and now I'm in the jungle.
We took a tuk-tuk to the jungle. Have you ever been on a tuk-tuk, Hannes?
Is that a whore of some kind? Because I think I was.
A tuk-tuk is a little vehicle. It's a three-wheeled vehicle in Thailand, and that's how you get around
town. I've seen it in James Bond movies. Everything for me is James Bond.
It's like a cab or something, but here's the thing. Mm-hmm. If you get a tuk-tuk driver from anywhere but in front of your hotel,
yeah.
In other words, anywhere that other than where it's vetted, as it were, they're going to take you to a jewelry shop before you get to where you want to go.
Yeah.
So any tuk-tuk you get in, they're
right.
not
and
taking
you. And if
you
don't buy jewelry, they'll probably kidnap you.
They'll leave. No, they're not going to kidnap you, but they're going to leave. You may or may not. In other words, everything in Thailand, at least in my experience, is about how the next person's going to get your money. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants your wallet. And so they kind of like, everything is based on, you know, I'll give you money if you bring those tourists to me. So right. It's a lot of selling. You're still not going?
You know what? I'm just going to go to Milwaukee and go to the Hampton Inn by the airport and order room service and then come back.
Oh,
I can't take it.
Oh, boy. All right, you guys. Dennis Gubbins is here right now. He's an actor and a writer, producer, and occasionally he does stand-up comedy. He's been a writer and a consultant on South Park and also on Flaked. He is also a writer-producer on the critically acclaimed Brody Stevens' Enjoy It. And he also produces a monthly stand-up show at the Westside Comedy Theater in Santa Monica called The Laugh Party. It's all right there in the
Laugh Party.
In the title,
da,
The Laugh
da, da,
Party.
Da, da, that sounds like something Dean Martin should have been on. It's The Laugh Party with special guests Dean Martin and Joey Heatherton. Special appearance by John Wayne.
And Dennis Gubbins. You can find him on Twitter at GUBTRON43, at Gubtron43. All right,
Gubtron43.
You guys.
Gubtron43.
That's catchy.
Gubtron42 is a false front.
Wherever you are, put your hands together for Dennis Gubbins.
No shit. There I was in the jungle, Thailand, 1994. But before we get there, a little backstory. So I just graduated college from the University of Oregon, go Ducks, and my mother, I was the youngest of four, and she had given everyone, this was her thing, she gave us all a round-trip plane ticket anywhere in the world as a graduation gift, which was pretty amazing. So I knew when I graduated what I wanted to do was go to Thailand where my aunt and uncle, both Americans, my mom's little brother, Dickie, lived, and they'd been living there for like 15, 20 years. So I was like, okay, I want to go there, but I also want to go to Nepal and go trekking because I've never done that. And I also want to go to Sumatra. So I bought this ticket in a way that I could do this circular move and see my cousin in Hong Kong and hang out. So firstly, graduate college, boom, get the ticket, go to Bangkok, meet my aunt and uncle in Bangkok. We were just talking about Bangkok, an amazing city. Spend two nights there. And they had been there so many times, they're like, okay, you got to see the city. So we cruised, we saw the Buddhas, we saw everything, we saw cool stuff. But then the first night there, my uncle like schluffed me off to this weird German dude he didn't really know. And he's like, you got to go check out Pad Pong, which is the red light district. And I was like, okay. So I went, my aunt and uncle stayed behind, and me and this German dude, who I think I said three words to the whole night, went to a nasty dance club area, saw a live sex act, which is one of the most boring, grossest things you'll ever see in your life. And I literally, at the time, I had sex with one woman at that point in my life. So I remember vividly looking at these two people boringly having sex, going like, good Lord, I hope one day I get bored of sex that much. And then, you know, they did the ping pong thing, the string. So already the trip was like, holy shit, this is going to be a memorable trip. So we spent two nights there, did that. Then we went to Nepal, where I ended up going on a rafting trip because I used to be a river rafting guide. So I ditched my aunt and uncle, go on this river rafting trip for a week. It was amazing. Go trekking for 3 weeks, have an amazing time. And then I go back to Thailand to meet my aunt and uncle, hang on the beach, and, you know, play volleyball and do all kinds of fun stuff and wait for my mom, who was then going to come meet me. So I'm there and we're hanging out. I arrive on this beach, and where my aunt and uncle live is an isthmus in southern Thailand. So you have to get there by boat. It's a landlocked peninsula. So if you put your hand up and make a U with your hand, this is the beach. Up top left index finger are these limestone cliffs where you rock climb, and then you come around. There's beach, 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 beautiful beach, play volleyball, hang out. And then near the little crux of your thumb down here is a rock outcropping. And then you had to climb around that, or at super low tide you could go on the beach, but very rarely. Then you go over that, and then there's another beach with a hotel, one bar, and then another limestone cliff wall. And at the tip of your thumb is the end of the cliffs, and there's a tiny jungle there and an even smaller beach. And that's where we end up going. And the beach is about the size of a basketball court, tiny. And you can't get there by swimming. You can't get there at low tide. You can't walk. So we have to take sea kayaks. But I'm jumping ahead. So I'm here with my uncle, who's my cool uncle. And I think most people have a cool aunt or uncle, and you need to have a few things. Like, they can't have kids, right? Because they have to have this freedom to travel and have stories. Now, my uncle and aunt, no kids, both American, as I said. My uncle was a Vietnam vet, and he did R&R in Thailand. And he thought, oh my God, when I get out, I'm going to come back here. He gets out. He works in Chicago doing some stuff, making a lot of money. We're not going to talk about how. You do the math. And then he and his, meets his wife. They get married in the early 80s. They live in Greece for a while. They live in Chicago. They live in Thailand. So they're doing this partial thing all year, living at a hotel in Greece, living, opening bars in Chicago, going to Thailand. So already it's like, this dude's cool. And he looks like Dennis Hopper in Easy Rider meets Al Pacino. He's like a little Italian guy from Chicago, but long gray hair, handlebar mustache. He's like 5'5", tan all the time, smokes more weed than anyone you know. Fun, funny dude. Hung, like, he's the guy who'll go to a club and all of a sudden the Stones show up and start playing an impromptu set. You're like, this stuff happens. He's the guy, when he was in Vietnam the next day, he left. When he got sent home, the guy who took his place got killed. Like, he's golden. He's blessed. He made money. He invested in this guy, Mel Fisher. Look this guy up. Treasure hunter. Guy was broke 10 times over. My uncle invested a little money. A month later, the guy finds this Spanish ship off of Florida. They're pulling gold links off of the boat. Gives my grandmother a coin. And the jeweler guy's like, don't touch this with human hands because this is one of the oldest coins ever minted in the New World. Like, he's that guy. So they live this crazy life. So I go there and we get along. We're like buddies. And my aunt, so we're all hanging out. So we play beach volleyball. We go rock climb. I learned to rock climb on these limestones or Thai people. The first day I'm there, I get off this boat. You have to take a boat from the town. Get off the boat, drop my bag, jump in the water, come up, and there's this beautiful topless British woman with a little rose tattoo on her breast. And I'm like, all right, this is going to be a good time. All right, I made it. I'm here. Things are going to be good. A month or so goes by. We go into the jungle. We rock climb up into cliffs. We find caves. We explore. We free climb. We do all this stuff. And my uncle's been talking about this one little beach, that little beach I described over there. He wants to sea kayak over there and rock climb up to try to get close to the sea eagle nest. I'm like, okay, fine. Let's go tomorrow. Fine. Plan. Ah, something comes up. Let's go next time. Oh, time goes by. Like a literal month has passed. We have yet to go to this one beach he keeps talking about. We're like, okay, dude, let's finally go. So we go with this American guy, Brian, who's a dentist living in Nepal, and his friend. So the four of us load up sea kayaks, and we sea kayak across. And it takes us like 10 minutes to sea kayak over there. We get to the beach. We land on this tiny beach, and it's thick jungle right off the beach. And we're like, okay, we got to bust through there. We got our, you know, long pants on. We got clamps. We got lights. We got everything. Pull up, and we start busting through this jungle. And already I see this little thing there, like there's a bow, like a broken bow. And I'm like, oh, that's too bad. Maybe some other people have been here before us because my uncle always wants to be the first, but don't say anything. And as we're going through the jungle, I hear this noise like this, kind of a weird monkey human noise. I'm like, that's weird. Don't really say anything. Get through the jungle. We get up to the cliffs and I hear the noise again. I'm like, that sounds weird. But again, I don't really say anything to the other guys. I don't know why. And we get to this point where my uncle's like, okay, great. The nest is right up there. Let's go. We're going to climb up. And then boom, we forgot to bring the ropes. So we couldn't climb up. We couldn't explore. So we're like kind of pissed off. And we're all standing around. I'm like, at this point, I'd been in Thailand for 2 months, I think, and my mom was supposed to come visit, but she had to cancel because she got ill. So I was like kind of running sick of my aunt and uncle, and we were rubbing each other wrong. And at this one trip, I had started calling myself Hop Sing because I was doing chores around the house. And I was like, what the hell? Like Hop Sing from Bonanza, maybe racist now, but back then he was the house guy from Bonanza. So I was like, what am I, Hop Sing over here? And because I do chores, I'm like, they're naked ladies running on the beach and volleyball. And like, what are we? I'm like, now I've got to like move these rocks to the pond you want to make, dude. So we have like a little bit of a battle going back and forth. And so we're standing there and they're like, we can go along the cliff here. I think there's a cave over there or whatever, you know, we can come back and see the sea. And I'm like, so frustrated. I'm like, I'm just going. And I bust through the jungle. And as I do, I hear the noise again. And I'm going through the jungle and I look and there's a woman lying on the jungle floor, looking up at me like a living skeleton. And she's like, like groaning. And she's a white woman. She has white skin, so we know she's a tourist. And I run down to her. I'm like, oh, my God, there's a lady here. Like, my voice went up 30 octaves. And then I'm like, oh, my God, there's a lady here. And then my uncle comes down, and I'm like, are you okay? And she's like, and she's mumbling, and her tongue was super swollen. She had scabs all over her body. She was wearing a tank top that was torn up and a sarong that was barely on her. No shoes. And like I said, she had worn this bed into the ground. We could see leaves around her. She had eaten leaves, and she ate the wrong part of the leaves, so she swelled up and got infected. And she kept thinking we're in Amnesty International. She's like, Amnesty? And she was speaking broken English. And so we're like, oh my God, we got to get her out of here. My uncle squirts water in her mouth. She starts like coughing it up. I'm like, dude, chill out. You know, and so like she's there. There's four guys there and she feels okay. So I'm like, all right, we got to carry her out. And like we had climbed over these rocks and through this thick jungle. So I pick her up on my back. And as I pick her up, I don't know why I say this, and I swear to God I do, and it's amazing. I pick her up and I have her on my back and I go, we're going home. Like out of a Vietnam movie, out of a war movie, right? And I'm like, we're going home. And I say that to her for some reason. And as I say it, I take two steps and this fourth guy, Rick, I think his name was, Brian's friend, an American guy visiting, takes a picture. And I was like, holy shit, I need to see that picture. But this is 1994, and if you're a casting director, it's 2004. But it's 1994, so like there's no cell phones, there's no Facebook, there's no sharing. And I was like, oh, I got to get that picture. So we carry her through, and I'm holding her. I'm holding both of her arms around my neck, keeping her on, and I got my hand on her butt, and it's just bone. Like I said earlier, so this is crazy. If we had come 3 days later, I think we would have found a dead person, like truly. And the jungle wasn't big, but when you're in there, the sounds bounce off the limestone cliffs, and there's ocean here, and she was perfectly in the center. So if she went that way 100 yards, she would have been like, it's jungle. If she went that way 100 yards, it would have been jungle and cliff. So she had given up. She just found her spot. She said monkeys were coming at night, harassing her. And so she was like close. And so I pick her up. I'm holding her neck. I'm holding her butt. As we're carrying her through the jungle, she starts almost vomiting. So I almost like put her down. We have to like physically pass her down through the rocks and take turns carrying her. And we get her out to this little beach. Brian and Rick put her on their kayak and they take off. And then me and my Uncle Dickie are behind them and we're there and we load up our kayak and we're going. And it's starting to hit me like, what's going on? I'm like, holy shit, we just found this lady, right? So we get back to the little town, like the little village where they are. Like if you look at the U where the big beach is, my aunt and uncle live in like your little knot of your thumb and palm. And they live back in there. There's like 10 houses and they live there and they have a guest house. And they just happened to be a woman, a nurse was renting out a house. So she was there. So they bring up this woman who turns out to be named Ruth. They take her in, they clean her up, they give her medicine. My aunt shoos me off to go get electrolytes from the store. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, I just found this lady. Give me a minute to breathe. But I go get the electrolytes. We bring them back. They clean her up. And then my uncle puts her on a boat, like a speedboat, and takes her into the town, Krabi, because there's no hospital. And he's like, all right, I'll take her into the hospital. He takes her into the hospital. And as that's going on, I'm like, fucking, like kind of like it's settling in. And I go down the beach to where this one bar is called Sunset Bar, which is where everyone goes and watches sunsets. There's beach volleyball there. You can swim. Everyone's hanging out. And so I'm now like, go down to this beach bar. And I sit down at the end of the bar and I'm like, oh, take a Sing Ha, right? Nice cold beer. And this is within 40 minutes of us bringing her back. And this one guy at the bar goes, hey, did you hear about that lady they found in the jungle? And I don't know why. I just go, oh no. Wow. That's cool. Sip of the beer and just like look off. I'm like, don't talk about it. I didn't want to talk. I didn't want to say it was me or anything. So we find her. We take her in. They track her down. She's a Swiss citizen named Ruth. Her sister, my uncle, spoke to, and she apparently had been suffering some sort of mental illness, thinking people were trying to get her. And she said she was on a boat with some Thai guys, and she jumped off the boat, which makes sense how to get there. Because like I said, it's a reef, and if you went at low tide, your feet, you'd be destroyed. So that makes sense that she thought they like just had a paranoid thought, or maybe she took drugs, was on shrooms or whatever, and thought she was being going to be raped and murdered. So she jumped off this boat, found her way to that little beach into the jungle, and like had lied down. So we leave, time goes by, like, you know, the beach is now called Ruth's Beach. And you know, we told that story numerous times. I moved to LA, and it's like 5 years later now, and I'm doing acting, I'm doing writing, I'm trying to do a one-man show, and I have all these different ideas, and then I focus in on being a redhead, and it's called Gimme Shade, aka Growing Up Red in America, and it's about racism against redheads, and I did this in 2000, long before the G word. And so I do this stuff, and I kind of made this story, and I was like, oh, wow, how can I get this Ruth story into this? Because she had red hair, and I'm like, oh, I can make that connection, you know, that we found each other because we're redheads, and I found her there and saved her, and then, you know, and I was like, well, what is that interesting? I thought, well, maybe like, think that she died. Let's say she died in the jungle, and in heaven, people are like, how did you die? It's like, oh, a car crash. How did you die? I died in the jungle of Thailand. It's a pretty cool story. And then we took her away from that, and now she died in a mental hospital. So that's what I was trying to work. I was like, eh, that's not that funny. It's not that interesting. So I think I told the story once in my show, but I was writing about it. And then all of a sudden my aunt and uncle are like, hey, we're coming to LA. We're going to be in Laguna Beach, and we have something for you. The next day, the first time I started writing about Ruth, the next day they send me this email, and I get chills. I'm like, oh my God, the picture. And so I go down to Laguna Beach, and I go up, and they have this poster tube, not even just a little picture, and they had printed out the picture and laminated it. And this now, folks, you can't see this, but maybe we can do it. This is the picture of me when I found Ruth in the jungle. And as you can see, she looks like a living skeleton. And I'm smiling because I'm in shock, and I look like a young Louis C.K. But yeah. So that's the story of Ruth.
Awesome. Great story.
Thank you. We'll have to take a picture of that picture.
Yeah, that's an amazing photograph. Yeah, I have a picture.
Because you got like the light on your head. You do look just like Louis C.K., which is hilarious.
And she does look like she's about to die.
And I'm not looking at camera, and she's staring right into the lens.
You look so happy. What are you? You're looking.
I know.
You
look ecstatic.
Like, I was like, it was an amazing thing. I'm like, holy cow, we just found this lady. We just found this lady in the jungle. I was like, what the hell?
So did your aunt and uncle still live over there?
Yeah, they do. They live in the same town, but they also have a jungle retreat at a lake in northern Thailand called Jungle Yoga, where they spend time. But they're still American citizens, so they have to leave.
There's something about expats that is so funny. They live a really good life.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you can't really tie them down.
No, you can't. And the thing is, I've thought of it. I had my cousin who's my, not there, you know, they have no kids, obviously, my same family line, my aunt. He lived over in Singapore and Hong Kong and Thailand. And so there's one, and like in my family, we don't have one. I'm always like, that's supposed to be me. I should be living in another country.
Well, a lot of times people now just go down to Costa Rica because it's a lot closer. But it's still the same idea of being out of America.
Right.
And out of, like, underneath the thumb of
I do love how they're giving you chores, and then you drag a lady to the house and she gives you another chore.
I know.
It's like, what'd you get?
That's exactly it. I was like, Jesus Christ, I just found this lady. Let me have to take a moment. You go get the electrolytes.
Right, I'm the youngest guy here. I'm the guy who had to carry her all the way down.
Did you find out her last name? Have you found her on Facebook?
We have not found her on Facebook or Twitter or anything. So Ruth, if you're out there, you're from Switzerland.
The lady in the jungle.
The lady in the jungle, the redheaded guy. Because she would refer to me. She'd be like, where's the redhead? Where's the redhead? Tell him thank you.
Really?
Yeah.
So she did speak
She spoke
English.
Broken English, but she was so whacked out when we found her. Like, I mean, her picture, you can see a little bit. Like, you could see her bones. I'll tweet you this, or I'll email it to you.
Yeah.
And, like, she was done. So.
That's amazing, Dennis. You really, really saved somebody.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty crazy. The fact that you even came across her.
Well, that's what I was saying in the
coincidence. Incredible.
Yeah. With trying to find a theme, it's like, you know, there's no coincidences. We're all connected kind of a thing. Because, like, my uncle literally would say almost every day, dude, I want to go get to this sea eagle. We got to go over there.
What's the sea eagle?
The sea eagle was this giant bird,
and his
nest was above that beach.
I see.
So that was how we would get there, to climb up. And like, then what would we do? We were smoking a lot of weed.
Yeah.
So it was like, what are we going to then do? Just take pictures? So, and the fact that we didn't have ropes, like if we had ropes and climbed up, we would have climbed up, gone down, been tired. like I said, if we had gone 3 days later, she might have been dead. If we had gone 5 days earlier, she wouldn't have been there.
What did you graduate? What did you graduate with from the University of Oregon?
People hunting.
People hunting. What is that?
Anthropology.
Mean?
Anthropology. Anthropology with a minor in
like
Spanish.
People hunting. Usually dead people hunting.
Yeah, dead people and artifacts. No, I studied stuff that I thought was interesting because I knew I wasn't going to be any of those things.
Yeah, right. No, that's a good idea.
If you had found her dead.
Yeah.
What would you guys have done? Because it isn't like you can call the cops.
No, we would have had to have called authorities.
Yeah,
we
would.
No, they're not going to bring a dead body.
Yeah, they'd take a dead body back.
I think we probably would have.
They wouldn't give her the water.
Huh.
Yeah, we'd have saved the waters.
You still would have been smiling in the photo with a corpse on your back, but because you're a sick
bastard. And the electrolytes would have been for me.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, no, I've thought of that many times.
That sounds like a horror movie to me, or like, you know, it's like you call the Thailand police and they're like, did you murder this woman? You know, part of you would just be like, let her go. I mean, it would occur to you because you're literally in the middle of nowhere.
I know. Yeah, exactly. And that's crossed my mind numerous times. And I'm just so thankful that we didn't find a dead person there because that would have been awful. Yeah.
I've been to, I was in the Peace Corps in the Kingdom of Tonga, which is an island. And so when you're talking about these beaches and these coves and the way you would get around a certain point, I kept picturing the way we would go to these remote beaches and these cliffs and we'd cross this and then cross that. And if it's low tide, you go around that corner and then you got to climb up this thing and you throw a rope up. And I did all that crazy shit. And at the time I did it, I knew it was stupid. And looking back, it's even stupider.
Yeah.
Because I could have slipped or any of those rocks and you think about falling and how remote and where we were.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, or the currents. And I think about how, you know, some of the rip currents and swimming where we were. I did so many stupid things. And now I have a daughter and I'm absolutely terrified she's going to go and do those things.
Well, I know. I have nieces and nephews. And I mean, I'm a little bit on my aunt and uncle and I did another trek 10 years later in Thailand and I'm paranoid because I was a river rafting guy and I was trained and I was like, you have to keep your eye on everyone and, you know, think about the worst case scenario. What are we going to do when someone dies? Like, you have to have that in your mind. So I have that in my mind. But this one was like, we had no idea. There was not like any like, hey, we're going to go and be all we were going to do that was dangerous was maybe free climb up some stuff.
But even there,
you could have fallen. Yeah.
There was a time we were climbing and there's these they call them the seven-step viper, because if they bite you, take 7 steps and die, right? And that's in Thailand. They're more snakes than anything.
I think I saw that in Kill Bill Part 2. Oh, yeah. That was the five-finger death punch.
You drop it in there.
Okay. Right?
So we're doing that one time, and we're free climbing up this back little area with, like, think crystal chair. There's all these different hikes and stuff. And so we're going up, and these French people are with us, and they're like, okay, take care of your head. And you're like, well, I don't know what that means. Like, right there, watch out. The snake is right there. And I'm like, on the rocks, 12, 15 feet up. And I'm like, right where? And I put my hand to reach up, my left hand up, and the snake is 8 inches away from my face.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, right. And I had to do like a side climb. And it's amazing what you can do when you're like scared to death.
You're suddenly you're
like
a goat.
Scampered up like a little monkey goat. Yeah. And I scampered and I was like, don't go that way. Like, I mean, I could have been bit and died right
there. Have you been doing any of this traveling like this lately?
No, I need to. I'm really desperate to. Maybe not that extreme, but I need to get out of the country.
You're worried that your daughter is. You let Uncle Hannes talk to her. She ain't going to any of these places because, you know, I started saying, I'm not going to Thailand. You didn't help with the story of the almost being, and now you find a dying person and drag her across the Nope, not going.
Yeah, but she will because I have that in me, that spirit. So she'll have it too. I know it.
I can quell that. I can tell her terrible stories.
When you were in the Patpong district.
Yes.
And then I've done this in Amsterdam too, the red light district. You see these live sex acts, and I've seen one of these shows, and it is so boring.
It is.
What was going on in the one you saw?
Well, like I said, they did the needle thing.
I don't know that.
A string
sounds
of needles, like sewing needles in her vagina, like a stack of them, and she pulls them out.
That sounds horrible. Yeah. What do you mean by that?
And mostly, it's
are
just
they together?
Fat,
I don't
fat
understand.
White guys sitting like with these little young Thai girls on their laps, watching this stuff. So there's a string like dental floss. And they're like stacked up like an accordion. And so when they come out, it's like, bring.
But that sounds like it would really hurt your vagina.
I
Why
know.
Would you want to put those in your body?
I don't think she wants to. I think she has to.
Bleeding?
No
was
blood.
It cut?
No cuts, no blood.
That
then
was
I saw the cigarette, the cigarette smoke.
What's the cigarette one?
Well, she put a cigarette in there, inhales, and blows out. And then the ping pong. Shoot the ping pongs at you.
That one's impressive. I mean, come on, let's face it.
But the sex act isn't, there wasn't another.
But they had man and woman were having sex, humping each other.
Well, what position were they in?
What do you call it? Missionary.
So that's
and truly the most boring thing. Yes. And the guy was looking around the room like, really, I'm doing this again? And the
guy's probably gay. He's just trying to make a dollar.
No, I know.
You know what?
It's awful. It's awful.
It's so funny. Of all the positions. Yeah. To if you're gonna, if you're gonna do this, can we see something?
I remember being in
reverse
Thailand.
Reverse cowboy or something?
Something. Yeah. I remember being in Thailand and seeing in the Pat Pong district, literally sandwich boards, menus that would say, two girls, one boy, three boys, one goat, a goat, two girls, and a boy, dog, a cat.
It's awful.
It's awful.
And I had studied Southeast Asia in my studies, and we had read a book about the sex trade. So it was I was I went, I did it. I think I was there for 20 minutes and I left, and the German guy I was with, I could not pick him out of a lineup, and I just left him behind, and I found my way back. Cause it was that thing of all right. And I've seen a porno being made since. Same idea. Not interesting, not sexy at all. Kind of surreal and lame and what this is.
But a porno being made, I could see that not being sexy because they're trying to get something done. I mean, I'm just, go ahead. Let's hear
it. Well, it's a real quick one. I was in this porno. I didn't realize I was going to be in it. And I went, and there's other friends of mine who are famous are in it too. And they're like, come on, these guys are in it. Do it. I'm like, all right, what am I going to do? And I had to sit on the couch with the husband of the woman who was having sex. And we critiqued them. They're making a porno comedy.
Oh, yeah. Wait, what's the name of this?
They killed Manny. It was kind of based on South Park, Kenny.
No, I don't know that. But there is another. I've seen a comedy skit, maybe on Funny or Die. I forget where they critique porno actors. Oh, no, I know what they do. They give the porno actors, they tell them the lines.
Oh, right.
They,
yeah.
They feed them the lines.
That was funny. No, this was not nearly that funny. This was weird.
Yeah.
And in it, this one woman, she had a pink jacket with a pink boa jacket, feathers. Yeah. And they're doing still shots. And she's giving the guy a blowjob and a hand job. And the director's like, oh, yeah, that's great. That's great. And the husband's sitting there, and I'm sitting there. I'm like, this is weird. And he's like, okay, that's great. Okay, jacket off. And she starts giving the guy a jacket. And he goes, no, I meant take your jacket off. And she goes like this with the guy's penis in her hand, like it's not, like just a prop. And she goes, oh, I thought you meant jacket off. So I was all like, weren't. And she started doing it more. And the guy's just lying there like, weren't. And I was like, all right.
It's all
I've
props.
Seen it all. Yeah. People, I mean, there's a girl studying for her GED asking who the 14th president was.
Yeah.
There was a drug deal that went down. I mean, it was it was an apartment right across from me in Hollywood when I lived in Hollywood. And I thought I was just going to be a grip, hold lights just to kind of experience it.
Yeah.
And then when I get there, okay, no, you're going to talk. And then they dubbed our voices.
Yeah.
So there's I still haven't seen. There's a porno out there with my face with a dubbed over voice.
Well, go ahead, Hannes.
Tell them. Christine and I both got hired by Hustler to dub a French porno.
So we are the ones that do the dubbing.
Oh my God. But in a serious way?
No, of course not. No,
but again, as I always say, we didn't dub groans, moans.
Because that's in any language.
Because in any language, it's is the same. So we dubbed the part that nobody ever watches.
Jack, can you come in the bedroom? No, my sister's not spending the night.
It's like nobody's going to watch
That's
this.
That's hilarious.
It could have been in French. It didn't, Right. But it was just, among the weird things. It's these French guys are uncut. And you're the Americans, they're always circumcised. And the
That's
French
not true.
Hey, I don't watch as much porno as you.
My point is everybody should get a little bit of time on a porno flick. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, no. And then we just got I remember the best thing was that you went into the overly elegant waiting room,
which
was
building.
Trumpish giant, and they had these beautiful leather bound editions of all the magazines that they. So you open it up and it looks like you're gonna read War and Peace, and it's like anal fisting.
Yeah, because everything was so hardcore. Because it's Penthouse, right? It was Penthouse.
No, it was Hustler. Hustler. It was way past
because
Penthouse.
If you go over to I've been over to the Playboy radio station in Burbank, and they've got all these beautiful Playboy magazines out, and they're all in different languages. They don't have any in English. They have every other country
That's
represented.
That's a weird thing. I remember in Germany is there'd be Playboys, and I'm like, how are these just not the same photos?
Right.
It's like every country does their own photo shoots.
Yeah.
Which seems like it's, you could save a lot of money. I mean,
I don't know. don't know how that works.
But you can tell the Czech face is a little different than the German face. It's a little different than the Dutch face, maybe.
The Dutch face is my favorite sex act to watch in Thailand.
Why am I talking about the faces?
Can we talk about... Yeah, I know, you sick bastard.
So, Dennis Gubbins...
Take your jacket off.
You've been in Los Angeles for 20 years.
I've been here for a while.
What are you doing?
Underachieving.
Yeah.
Mostly. I'm an actor,
mostly.
Welcome
to the club.
Where's your family? Are they still
Northern California.
Northern California,
yeah. Marin County. I grew up in Mill Valley. Born in Chicago. Most of my family's in Chicago.
Chicago.
But my parents bailed in the early 70s when I was like 2 and moved to California and got divorced.
Well, you're fortunate, though, to grow up here.
Oh, I was very lucky. No, I if I had grown up in Chicago, I'd weigh 300 pounds easily. I just love the food.
Yeah.
I know. We were talking about it. It's like I see, you know, it's like I definitely have to lose weight, but then I see on Facebook my high school friends. I'm like, oh, that's what I would look like.
Yeah. Yeah, you're doing all right, man.
So tell us about the West Side Comedy Theater, the show that you do over there, the Laugh Part.
Well, firstly, the West Side Comedy Theater is a fantastic place to see comedy, as well as learn comedy. It's an improv school.
Oh, I see.
And they do long form. So it's kind of like an improv Olympic or, it's long form, kind of Chicago style improv, which I love. And then they do now, it's about, the theater's 7 years old, but they've had the bar there for about 5 years. Mm-hmm. And so the bar really took it off. And we started our show right when they were building the bar.
Oh, good.
My friend Carrie Clifford and I. So we do it once a month. And we've gotten people down there like Dimitri Martin's stopped in.
Great.
Damon Wayans, Zach Galifianakis, Tig
Notaro.
They're
doing stand-up?
They're doing stand-up.
Okay.
And then we're doing stand-up. And it's a lot of people who are on their way up. Okay. And people you know like Jamie Kaler, Matt Knutson.
Yeah, good for you.
Folks like that. Karen Kilgariff. You know, all these people. And then it's great. It's near my house. It's in an alley. There's a bar. The people are really cool. They're
Brilliant.
Chicago style.
Yeah.
So everyone should go there and learn or
there you
enjoy.
Go. There
do they
you
have
go.
Miller High Life like they used to have at the
thank
Iowa
you.
West?
Yes, they do. And you know why? Because I demanded it. They
thank
asked what
you.
Beers? Because they have all these nice beers. And I was like, at the High Life.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the champagne of beers.
But
it
what
is.
Happened to Pabst Blue Ribbon, PBR? No?
That
I don't
became
know.
Hipster.
I never was a fan of Pabst. It had too much of a malty taste for me.
No, Pabst Blue Ribbon has always been a terrible beer, but now it's become hipster.
Yeah.
But it's so successful now, finally, they're moving... The brewery, they're moving it back to Milwaukee.
Oh, good.
Which makes me happy.
Why are they doing that?
Because it's so popular now. They went into the, you know, there was a Pabst Brewery, which closed down many, many, many years ago. Building's still there. Now they're moving back into it. And so they're actually going to make Pabst Blue Ribbon in Milwaukee, which is cool.
Do you remember a beer called Point?
Yeah, from Stevens Point.
Yeah, because my family's Chicago and Wisconsin. So my cousin's in Cedarburg. Wisconsin.
Oh, Cedarburg, sure.
Yeah, so we'd go out there and like...
This is podcast gold, by the way.
But they could drink beer like nobody, and they would say motor oil's motor oil, was their saying, and it just didn't matter what the beer was.
What does that mean? Motor oil is motor oil.
It all works.
Who matters? Yeah, eventually you're getting drunk.
Yeah.
No, Point was actually a pretty good beer. It was from Stevens Point, which is a town up near Green Bay, I think, relatively near Green Bay. Then, of course, in Chicago, the number one beer, Old Style, from Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember a beer called Buckhorn?
No, that's Buckhorn. Stupid. Your beers are stupid. No. Our beers are cool.
Yeah. Hey, listen, you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
I would love to. Spin the wheel.
That music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel.
So the wheel stopped on virginity, and if you listen to the earlier part of the podcast, you realize I waited a while, not by choice, to have sex. And I ended up, the first time I tried to have sex with my then-girlfriend out of college, I was not able to perform. I was so excited. And then I was able to perform, and it was in the bedroom where my mother later passed away.
Wow!
Thank you!
No.
Wow.
Thank
listen.
You!
Listen, that's much better than the bedroom where your mother had previously passed away.
True.
You're not responsible for
Gotta
things that happen in the future.
It's the most memorable room in the house. I'll just say that much right now.
Is that house still stand?
Yes, my sister lives there with her three sons.
Do they know that that's where you lost your virginity?
I don't know if
she
they
does
do.
Now.
She does now.
I bet your nephews are going to be so proud.
Oh, yeah, they're going
to. Well, they've recently lost their virginity to the bed that's in there between
it's
the mattress
there.
And
Same
the...
Futon.
Same futon. Oh, yeah. It's got like this Shroud of Turin. It's got an image of you
it
on
does.
There.
Thank you so much for coming
for
on and telling
me.
Your story.
Yeah,
that
thank
is
you.
A fantastic story.
Oh,
just amazing.
You.
Really fantastic. All right. We want to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Sean Merrick and Roddy Swearingen. And, of course, Ben Stewart. Thanks for recording with us tonight, Ben. Did you hear that there's a nail in my chair? Somebody's got to get over here and
okay,
fix this nail.
Okay, this is time for me to get in. Ben, right, who I always say looks like Aaron Rodgers.
Mm-hmm.
He fucking tweets a picture last week. Aaron Rodgers was here at the Improv on a night I thought I might come and didn't, which is most nights, let's face it.
Yeah, let's
face it. And he puts a picture. Aaron fucking Rodgers is right here in the Improv. My hero.
Yeah. Should have been drafted by the Niners.
Talk about a jack-off. Talk about a hand job. I would have done whatever Aaron Rodgers wanted. And now,
can you imagine if you had been here? You would have lost your shit. You would have lost
it. No, I would have lost it.
That would have been so cool.
Actually, but if I could have had a moment to gather my thoughts, I would have, you know, if he had met Ben already, I would have walked up to Aaron Rodgers and go, I don't know, something like, Ben, cut it out. Change your clothes.
Yeah, you wouldn't have believed him, exactly.
Yeah. And of course, Ben always wears a Philadelphia Eagles hat, which is hilarious.
Because
it's not the Packers.
Well, maybe he's not a Packer fan. Just because he looks like somebody doesn't mean he's a fan of theirs.
I know, but he's wearing it in the picture with Aaron Rodgers, which I find amusing.
All right. And on behalf of John Thomas Griffith, you know, he wrote the theme song, Follow Me.
Did he?
He did.
If I meet him, I don't care.
And on behalf of our storyteller, one more time, thanks so much, Dennis Gubbins.
Thank you.
We really appreciate you coming in.
Thank you.
And on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy of you.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com. I'll keep you safe.